Well, hello everyone and welcome to the Veg Grow Podcast. And my name's Richard. Today is the 24th of April, 2017. And this week's title is Interview with Steve from Seaside Allotment and Seaside Life. I'm really buzzing today to share this interview today as I found it really inspiring. Listening to Steve's experience that he'll talk about on the interview and seeing his YouTube videos and his blog, it really, really, really inspiring. So looking forward to this and sharing it all with you. I'm also buzzing as I celebrated my birthday yesterday, and I've also got this week off work, which has given me some much needed rest, time in the garden, and getting shit done, basically. So firstly, anyway, let's discuss what's been going on the plots. Saturday, I took a trip to Fall House and a garden show they had there. I have to admit, I was a little disappointed after going to it. There was a lot of stalls selling things, and some interesting products and things like that. But you paid to get in, and all it seemed to be really doing is selling stuff in there, which I wasn't overly impressed with. They had a small amount of gardens that we could have a look at, but nothing really there. No, they had a private garden, a private kitchen garden, I should say, sorry, that I really wanted to look at. The only way you could get in to see it was to participate in planting a tree. And they basically told you to meet over the tannoy, which wasn't the easiest to hear at times. But the tannoy said, meet these people in outside the big tree. Well, what was a big tree? There was loads of them. So, I didn't get to see that, which is a shame. I would really like to do that. I was a bit disappointed, as I say. The good thing was I did buy a trough from Lavender and Leeks, who had a stall there. If you look on the blog, there's a featured image of the, which shows the trough that I've bought. I'll be planting that up in the future. I'm thinking of putting a blueberry bush in there, but we'll see on that. But Lavender and Leeks, I've mentioned before, she's got a fantastic blog. It was nice to meet her in person. And hopefully one day I'll get her on the show, actually. But we'll see. We'll see. Sunday, Sunday was my birthday, so I basically stayed at home as I was expecting a lot of visitors and potted in the garden. When my nieces came over, they helped me sow some more seeds, like they do. So we sowed some watermelons. This variety called Red Star. Now, some of these were actually seeds I gave my niece for her birthday back end of last year. So she wanted to do these, and it's about time. I'd sown some other of a different variety last week, and they've germinated. So I knew these would survive. So we've sown those for her, as well as a few of my own. We also sowed some sweet corn, which is a variety called Bodacious and Incredible. I've put those in retrainers, and they're in the greenhouse, and we will see how they get on. I then potted up some of my Alicante tomato seedlings, just into bigger pots, as I think they could have done with a bit of growth, a bit of a bigger room to spread their roots. What I kind of did, as you know, I'm always trying to save money and find ways of making things easier. Well, for labels, I basically put a bit of electrical insulation tape on the pot, and then with a Sharpie marker, wrote on the electrical insulation tape. Cheap, and it works. So little tip for anybody out there, insulation tape, Sharpie marker, there you go. I then spent some time planting up the spinach seedlings, which are doing pretty well. I've planted some into some troughs in the greenhouse and some in my wooden planter. We'll see how they get on. We'll keep adding water and what have you, watering them, and see how they do. And then today, as I've basically got a week off today, I decided I was going to go down the allotment for a few hours like I try and do on a weekly basis. I started off by just streaming again. I'm trying to do that weekly at the moment just to keep on top of it. It seems to work quite well, as long as the streamer obviously works. I then spent a long time weeding the beds, and that's something I'm really trying to focus on at the moment, is weeding the beds. As soon as I turn my back, there's more weeds, so I really need to get that done. I particularly spent some time weeding the raspberries. Where I weeded them a few weeks ago, they've sprouted up again. So I got right in there again and with a hoe and just knocking them, getting them down to earth. And then the raspberries that I didn't weed last time, I've weeded those out again, and we'll see how they get on. I then planted out some broccoli, a variety called Rab 60. I don't have much good things to say about these seedlings, actually. The seedlings themselves weren't looking brilliant, so we'll see how they get on now they're in the soil. But when I've tried these in the past, I've not found them too brilliant. However, I did notice one of my Brussels sprout plants that I basically cut at the base, that has re-sprouted and started growing again. So I'm going to leave that to grow and see what happens, just as a complete and utter experiment. You never know, we might get a way of making perennial Brussels sprouts, but we'll see. So that's the diary taken care of. Let's bring on Steve and the interview. I'm joined today with Steve from Seaside Allotments. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you very much, Richard. Pleased to be here.
Lovely, lovely. So I came across you obviously through YouTube and was blown away with your allotment as soon as I saw it, especially in how little time you done it in. But for those who haven't seen your videos or anything, just start a little about. Bit about where you're from and about yourself.
Right, so well, I live up in the northwest of the UK, in Luton St Anne's, which is just between Preston and Blackpool, just below the Lake District. And where we are is pretty mild. The sea keeps it quite warm, but it is very windy. So if you see any of my videos, there's lots of windbreaks and things like that. But that's so that's where I'm from. A bit about me. Well, I'm retired. I used to work in IT and business strategy. And once I'd retired, it was just such a relief, really, to get my hands stuck into physical labour after so many years kind of thinking and writing and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I've really loved the gardening that I've been doing in the last 18 months or so. It's been great fun.
Yeah, I can imagine that. That is really good after... after being stuck behind a desk all day, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, your plot, give us a rough description on that and the size and how you've set it up and everything, please.
Yeah, so my plot is a standard allotment, which I think is about 250 square metres.
Yeah.
It's set up sort of multiple areas, really, although they're not that neatly... divided physically. So there's a fruit garden with lots of raspberries, strawberries, pear trees, apple trees, blackcurrants, gooseberries and the like. And then there are beds dedicated to salads and brassicas, beetroot, carrots and beans and that sort of thing. Most of the salads are grown in coal frames and mini hoop tunnels. And that allows me to do a lot of season extension. So we'll probably talk a bit more about that later.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
I probably should also mention, Richard, that I also have, a kitchen garden at home.
Yeah.
Which is mostly set aside for fruit. But we also just grow a few cut things that are there for convenience, really. So we've got a lot of fruit trees there. Loads of cherry trees, apple trees, pear trees, and that sort of thing. My wife's also got an allotment, and on her allotment she's got plum trees and apple trees and pear trees as well. So we've got lots of trees, lots of fruit, loads of berries. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
They all taste really good, I bet.
They certainly do.
Now, your first video, you said that you basically turned it over within 18 months. How did you...
Three weeks. Yeah.
Well, 18 months since you've been going, but yeah, okay. Turned it over in 3 weeks. And I have to say, it's absolutely fantastic looking plot. How do you feel you achieved that in such a short time?
Well, I was lucky in that I got the plot right at the beginning of March. And I kind of set myself the objective of getting it cleared and finished by April so that I could start the April planting. And it just happened to be a fantastic April. My health was good at the time as well. It's not always good, but that month it was really good. And I managed to enlist my daughter's boyfriend's help for a couple of those weeks. And then she and he had a baby. It was born a bit early. And so they kind of got a bit diverted, so I had to finish up on my own. But, yeah, so I basically had 3 weeks labour, basically, of my own labour. And 2 weeks of John's labour, so about 5 man-weeks in total. And we probably worked about 2/3 of that time, so let's call it 4 weeks. And we just kind of in a structured way, we just set about clearing it. So I did, we cleared all the debris. There was a lot of debris, lots of old paving slabs and bricks and stones and, you know, all of that sort of thing. Loads of old wood and nails and, you know, so we cleared all of that stuff. We pulled up all the old plants that were no longer viable. We dug up everything that was in the wrong place and sort of set that aside to move it to new locations. And then we did a time dig. And so we dug for an hour and saw how much of the plot it would take. So how long it took to dig that area of the plot and clear it of weeds and rubble and all of that sort of thing. And then we kind of then we worked out that we basically had to dig for about, it was probably only about 3 or 4 days in order to dig the whole of the allotment. So we manually dug the whole thing, leaving a completely clear square. Then we replanted all the stuff back into the right locations. Mostly this was things like blackcurrants and gooseberries and those sorts of things. Then we got the lines out, marked out where we wanted all of the raised beds, put all those line markers in. We levelled the plot, actually, while we were digging it. One of the problems with it was quite uneven, and that meant that all the water ran off into a neighbour's plot and flooded their plot. So we levelled the plot. Put all the line markers in, built all the raised beds, put all the fabric down, filled all the raised beds with a mixture of soil that we'd use for from the levelling, well-rotted horse manure, and spent mushroom compost, and then put bark down over the fabric. To stop the weeds. And, you know, built a few bean frames and pea frames and things like that along the way and did a bit of paving and built some compost bins and, you know, all of that sort of thing as well. And that was pretty much it. So at the end of April, that was about three weeks in, we got to that point. And then we built some hoop frames, mini hoop tunnels and frames for... mesh to keep flies off and things like that. And then we started planting pretty much at the beginning of April on schedule. And then it took then about 6 months really to get the feel for the plot and figure out what we wanted to do in kind of phase two. And then we started phase two in August and September. Then we cleared some of the temporary areas that where we'd done a strawberry bed with some very old strawberries that didn't really do anything, some raspberries that didn't do anything, and some temporary pea netting and stuff we'd put up. We cleared all that, and we built three coal frames, and we also built a hotbed in another little area that we found that was free. And we grassed, there was just a little bit area that we'd sort of kept under fabric because it was very ridden with weeds. So we covered that over until August, September time, and then we grassed that. And that was pretty much the end of it then. Since then, it's just been planting. We planted up the coal frames in August and September. We planted the hotbed in February. And we planted the hoop tunnels in December, actually, believe it or not. So we had plug plants that we'd grown under lights in November. And they were sort of nicely matured middle of December. It was mild. So we just opened up the hoop frame, cleared it out, put all these plug plants in there, and put some fleece over them. And that, you know, come the beginning of February, we were cropping those, and we were also cropping the hotbed about a few weeks later. So that, I mean, the hotbed had different stuff in it than the hoop tunnel, but and it basically it's just been flooded with veg ever since, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen your videos and I'm blown away with the amount of food you're getting already. I mean, I'm just getting this year's crops starting to come through, but it's been quite slow in comparison to what you've got. I mean, those hotbeds obviously really make a difference.
I mean, I think the combination is, it's the right plant at the right place.
Yeah.
So things like radishes and carrots and things like that come really early in the hotbed, and beetroots and things like that. Whereas just things like spinach and lettuce and things like that, they're fine just in unheated tunnels and the coal frames. So, you know, it's the right thing in the right place. I mean, we've taken, we keep a simple note of how much monetary value we've cropped off the allotment. And we're about £267 worth in monetary value so far, which is about 200 of those big ice cream containers full of veg so far.
Well, is that since the beginning of the year?
Since the beginning of the year, yeah.
Wow.
We'd actually count January, because in January, all we picked were brassicas in January, basically.
Yeah.
And I wasn't keeping track of how much money we'd taken. So that's actually from the 1st of February.
Wow.
When we started keeping track. So two and a bit months.
It's at £100
a month. Oh, easily. Yeah, easily. Already, you know, so all of those hotbeds and coal frames and things like that have been, we pay for those just in the first 2.5 months of the year. Yeah.
Fantastic.
We took about £1,500 worth of veg last year.
Wow. That's fantastic. I mean, I don't keep track of what I bring in.
We just count. So, I mean, we do it very crudely.
Yeah.
We have a standard container that we crop into. They're a big 2-litre storage sort of Tupperware-type container. And so we just, every time we fill one of those, we just count that, you know, number of those containers. And obviously sometimes we underestimate, because if we're filling it with something of very high value, say asparagus or something, then we're kind of underestimating. But if we fill it just with winter beans, say, then we're kind of overestimating. But overall, it works out about right at about £1 a container. So.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, of course, it's all fresh, and you know what's gone into the soil.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, so it's very popular with all of the people we barter with, because obviously we can't eat anywhere near that number of that amount of veg, and so we tend to barter. So, for example, you know, we barter with somebody who gives us our eggs, and they just take three containers a week, and they give us 12 eggs. We barter with the neighbours, and they just give us tomatoes and cucumbers out of season and things like that. We barter with people on the allotment, and you know, they give us leeks, say, or potatoes or onions or whatever, you know, when we don't have enough. Because we don't tend to grow the things that are cheap. So, I mean, although we do grow potatoes and onions and leeks, we don't grow enough for the whole of the year. So we don't, for example, grow any bait, or we haven't so far grown any baking potatoes. Mm-hmm. So if we wanted baking potatoes, we'd barter for those. Because the amount of space it takes, you know, in a bed of potatoes, I could crop probably, I don't know, let's say 50 pounds, no, probably more than that, probably 100 pounds worth of salads off that bed in a year. Mm. And with that, I could buy organic, you know, I could probably buy 10 times that bed's worth of organic potatoes with that amount of money. So, you know, we just barter. And I say we barter a lot on the allotment because we grow a lot of salad stuff. You know, beetroots and carrots as well, because our environment is quite slug free. Right. Partly it's slug free because we've got the nets up. Partly it's because we've got raised beds. Partly because we've got bark paths, but also because we water with nematodes every 6 weeks, and so we don't really have much of a slug problem. Whereas most of the other people on the allotment, they don't grow many salads because of the slugs. So, you know, they're always coming to us for salads, and they trade us with onions, for example. So it works really well.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, that's one of the things I love about allotments is the sociability that goes with them.
You
can do the barter. You can exchange tips and things. And everyone's friendly about it.
Yeah, we make sure that it's always unofficial. You know, there's never any sense of we're giving you this much, so we expect this much back.
Yeah.
You know, so right now I'm providing salads to, you know, 5 or 6 people on the allotment. I'm not getting anything back at the moment. You know, I'm just giving away as much salad as I can grow to as many people who'll take it. You know, so occasionally we have a formal relationship like the eggs, but most of the time we just give it, you know, we grow the stuff, we eat as much as we possibly can, we give everything else away, and then when other people have surpluses, you know, they just give to us, and it's, you know, totally voluntary and unofficial, and that makes it nicer, you know, than if it's a sort of formal trading arrangement, you know, where, you know, there's an obligation on both sides.
Yeah. I mean, it does speak volumes that people will, they're happy to eat the food and give something in return.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we say a lot about modern culture being very selfish. When you see things like this go on, it doesn't happen. It doesn't. It's not a selfish attitude. It's a very community inspired.
It is. Yeah. It's lovely. I mean, I think that's one of the things I like most about the allotment, you know, is that there's a very strong community. There's a lot of goodwill. Everybody's willing to help each other and put themselves out to help. And I think that's, you know, something that, as you see, you don't see in the larger community. We also see it can be grown, that sort of community as well. It's not automatic. And the more you give, you know, the more you get back. We certainly noticed the community on our street improve as a result of giving away fresh fruit and vegetables. We often leave a lot of stuff at the gate, you know, and it always goes, you know. And sometimes when the kids were younger and we used to grow strawberries and things like that, we would give stuff away and we would just leave an honesty box there. And, you know, not locked, just a jar with money in it. You know, and we never had anything stolen, you know, and the kids loved it, you know, just, you know, putting all the spare produce out there.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Okay, so Next question, but I think I know the answer, isn't it, is what is your favourite food to grow?
Well, you probably don't, actually, because my favourite are berries.
Oh, wow.
So in the back garden, we have a lot. We have 5 strawberry beds. I think we've probably got about, how many metres? Probably about 30 metres of raspberries. We've got about 15 blueberry bushes, about 20 blackcurrant bushes, about 10 cherry trees, and then it's probably apples and pears, and we've got many apple trees now, 5 apple trees, I think, and 3 pear trees and a plum tree. So fruit really is my passion, and that's what we keep at home, mostly at home anyway. The benefit at home is that we've got lots of cats around, so we don't have to net anything, which is just perfect for the berries. And loads of gooseberry bushes. I forgot to mention the gooseberries. We've probably got about 15 gooseberry bushes. So, so we love our berries. And then what's the next kind of best? Well, I mean, I love growing stuff where there's no waste. So I love the salads because you eat everything. I love beetroot because you eat the leaves and the roots. I love radish because you eat the leaves and the roots. Even when we're growing back brassicas, you know, sprouts and things like that, we're always eating the leaves of the sprouts all the way through the year. And then we cut the sprout tops off. We eat the sprout tops. And that's actually an interesting thing we did last year, just by mistake. We made the netted frame that we made was too small for the sprout. They grew absolutely giant. So we cut the sprout tops off in August. And as a result of doing that, the sprouts came on really early. So we were eating sprouts in September all the way through to January. But we had these amazing sprout tops. And we just popped those in buckets of water in the garage. And they kept for about 2-3 weeks. They were amazing. So this year, what we're going to do is we're going to gradually cut the sprout tops off. So we don't eat a huge amount of sprouts. So we probably have, say, 6 or 7 sprout plants. And we'll take a sprout top off every 2 weeks. And then we'll eat the leaves. And then that'll bring those sprouts on early in the year. And obviously by the time we get to February or whatever, the sprout tops won't be very good quality. But the sprout tops are just amazing. Now this year, or last year, we cut those sprout tops off. We had probably about 15 sprout tops. And we had to give away about 10 of them. And they were the most popular gift I've ever given on the allotment. I just walked around with this wheelbarrow full of sprout tops and was like giving them away, and everybody went absolutely wild for them. I said they were the best brassica they've ever had. I mean, everybody always says, you know, you always cut the sprout tops off, but nobody's ever mentioned doing it in August. So as I say, it's a, you know, just by accident we happened to do it, and it was amazing. But we do the same with broccoli. You know, we'll eat the broccoli leaves. In fact, I have a whole bed of brassicas that are just planted just for the leaves, just broccoli leaves and sprout leaves, and we'll be eating those between, well, they're actually just about ready now actually for picking, and we'll start eating those, and we won't actually leave them to maturity. We'll just use them for the leaves, and we'll eat those leaves all the way through until our broccoli crop starts in about September. So we'll be eating the leaves through till September, and then we'll actually start eating the sprouting broccoli. And it will be the same with the sprouts. We'll be eating the leaves until we actually start picking the sprouts. So that's what we tend to do. We don't really freeze anything. But with this kind of growing style of eating the leaves early in the year, you know, starting everything off under in the coal frames and the polytunnels and things like that, apart from things like beans, which, you know, you obviously you can't grow out of season, the brassicas were pretty much eating the whole of the season. And we just look forward to the beans coming back into season. My beans are going in my polytunnel for an early crop.
Yeah.
And we do a late crop as well, a late plant. And we eat those until the first frost. So were eating those until, you know, first frost is quite late here. Yeah. So it's well into October, maybe sometimes into November, yeah, before we pull out the last of those.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm obviously down on the south coast, but I'm quite close to the sea as well. And generally, our first frost is around November. I mean, I think last year it was end of November when I finally pulled up my sweet potatoes after they'd been killed off by the frost.
I remember seeing them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was, I mean, those sweet potatoes were brilliant, 3.5 kilos I got out of those, and I didn't really look after them as well as I should have. But it just goes to show that extending the seasons like you've been doing, it gives so much better quality of food and early on, and allows you to eat seasonally all year round.
Yeah, the only month that we've really had to, I mean, obviously we can't grow tomatoes out of season and things like that, and we eat a lot of salad, so we still need tomatoes, but we barter those and cucumbers and things like that. But for most of the basic stuff, you know, for the evening meal and the basic salads we have for lunch, we've been pretty much self-sufficient apart from January. January was the only month where we didn't quite plant enough in August to get us through January. February was fine. Everything had started picking up again by then. Yeah. But, this year the objective is to see if we can get through January. One thing I didn't mention in terms of things that I love to grow is that I don't actually like potatoes, but the family love them. But I just love cropping potatoes. I just love getting one of those tubs and emptying it out into the wheelbarrow. Yeah. You know, it's just such a fantastic feeling. I just adore doing that cropping. And the same with carrots. They're just, you know, hidden away under the ground, and you're never quite sure what you're going to find.
No.
Yeah, it's just fantastic.
Yeah. What varieties of potatoes have you grown?
I'm terrible with names, but the one I can remember is Charlotte. I remember somebody saying, and I can't remember where I heard this, but that basically you can kind of plant Charlotte all the way through. You can plant it as a early, and you can plant it mid, and you can plant it as main crop. So I got quite a lot of Charlotte, and I think, what was the other one I did? Pent and Javelin, I think, was one of the other early ones, I think, that I'd got. I'm just terrible, unfortunately, with variety names for everything.
Sure.
The only way I can kind of keep track of the thing, and also not very well organized, but Amazon keeps me organized. I buy everything from Amazon, and so I can just go onto Amazon and search my history of what I've previously bought and find anything, you know, and just buy it again from that list. So and it's cheap as well. Crazy cheap seeds from Amazon, and you know, quite a few people say that some of them aren't very good quality, but we've never had a problem with them, so I'm quite happy to keep on doing that.
I'm a big fan of Amazon. I also find their shipping. You order something on a Saturday afternoon, and it's there on a Sunday. It's phenomenal how quick they just get the stuff out to you.
Yeah, and you can get pretty much everything you need you can get as well, because, you know, I've scoured a lot of these books for, you know, particular varieties and things that grow well in the winter and things like that. And so, you know, I just search on Amazon, pretty much always manage to find it there. And so it means I have one record of every seed that I've ever bought, basically, and it's always easy to find. So, yeah, it's great.
Great. So, what has been your biggest learning curve?
Weeds, watering, and always being in a surplus. So I think I kind of kidded myself that I'd got the weeds problem sorted.
Never.
Because obviously I did it in March, and everything looked pristine in April. I thought, wow, this is fantastic. I think I could keep on top of this. And then the bindweed came through, and the mare's tail came through, and basically, you know, every other weed just came through. I found that the whole plot was infested with mare's tail and bindweed. Even though I thought, you know, when we dug it out, I thought we dug everything out, but of course, you know, I didn't know anything about these weeds and how resistant they are, basically, to being dug out. So, you know, last year was a real battle against particularly the bindweed and the mare's tail. And I was really pleased that I put the fabric down and the bark on top. And then I kind of, you know, did the old trick of getting the bindweed to grow around some canes, and then laying those canes down on the floor and stamping on it and spraying it with weed killer and all of that sort of thing. So, and, you know, every time the mare's tail came up, we picked it, you know, so it never saw the light of day.
Yeah.
And still this year, you know, there's still some mare's tail coming through, there's still some bindweed coming through. But, you know, after having fought it for a year, and now I'm no longer scared of it, you know, I think it's a manageable problem. But I just didn't realise just how much effort I would have to put into it. And, you know, now I think, yeah, I know how to deal with it. A few more years and I'll probably be there. But and I'm also doing the no-dig thing with a good thick layer of compost. And I have 4 cubic metres of compost bins and 3 plastic bins. And we fill all of those, filled all of those last year, and then we put a good 2 inches of compost down on the beds, all of the beds this year. And it has helped with weeds. It's definitely less weeds this year than there were last year. But of course, it's not a panacea. But over time, I guess more and more layers of compost will help. And also hot composting wherever I can to kill the weed seeds in the compost. Because I noticed when if I cold compost, that compost is just full of weed seeds. So, you know, putting that down is not much of an effective weed deterrent. Watering, I think I watered too much last year, mostly because I'm just on sandy soil and everything just dried out instantly. Yeah. But now because I've got this thick layer of compost on top, I'm hoping to be able to water once or twice a week. And hopefully never for the beds that aren't covered, but for the few beds that will stay covered, you know, well into June sort of time, and from September, that they still need watering. And the final thing is being in surplus. So the only way to be self-sufficient is to grow a big surplus. And it's taken me a while to figure out how to effectively grow a surplus. You know, so I've learned a lot about that. You know, learned a lot about building a network of people who are happy to take as much veg as I can grow for them. Getting a stock of containers. I've got about 20 of those big 2-litre storage containers, which I always crop into. You know, I was always running out of those, so now I've got loads of them. And they're only £1. From a shop called Home Bargains, which I don't think you have down south, but
we do.
Yeah. Oh right. Well, it's amazing. You know, on Amazon, those can say exact same containers are £5, but Home Bargains has them for £1. So even having a big stack of 20, and they slide perfectly into our fridge, so we can get loads of them in. So that's you know, just learning all the tricks around. You know, growing a surplus, you know, succession planning, and all of those sorts of things. So I'm never short of anything, always in surplus, always got people to give stuff to. So those are my 3 things really: weeds, watering, and surplus.
Sure. Excellent. Okay. So what advice would you give somebody who's just starting out in the, growing their own food hobby? I mean, I guess for you, you only recently started as such, is probably advice you would give yourself when you first began.
Yeah. So although I only recently started, I guess I've been a kind of frustrated smallholder since I was probably about 13 when I first got the self-sufficiency book by John Seymour out of the library. And I read that and I thought, God, that's the life for me. And then, unfortunately, it was never the life for me because I had to earn money. But I've eventually got to that point. And so really no space is too small, I think, is the first place to start. My mum, for example, is a perfect example of this. I mean, her garden is probably about half the size of my front room, It's really, really small. She's got almost no space to grow. But she loves to, she does still grow some stuff there, but she loves to forage. And she gets an amazing variety of stuff by foraging. She goes out cycling. She's 73. She cycles pretty much every day. And she knows where everything is. She knows where the plum trees are, in the apple trees. She knows where there's blackberries and raspberries growing in the hedges and all that sort of thing. She knows where there's potatoes cast aside in the, on the edges of fields. It's just amazing the stuff that she manages to forage. And obviously she's got, salads growing in containers. She's got a grapevine growing over the door. And all of that sort of thing. So, and we love growing potatoes on the patio in tubs. They don't get blight here. They get blight on the allotment, but they don't tend to get blight here. So we just love the fact that you can just grow small amounts, but worthwhile amounts in very small spaces. In January, we grew sprouts in a jam jar. We had three jam jars and basically did successional planting of the sprouts. So we were cropping a jam jar of sprouts every day and putting those in our smoothies. Even a jam jar is space enough and that works amazingly well. And experiment, I think. So the seeds are just so cheap. You always get way too many in a packet, or almost always get too many in a packet. So you can experiment. You don't have to, when you read a book or read the thing that says on the packet of seeds, but plant at this time of year or whatever. Well, just experiment, So if something doesn't grow well in the summer, we'll plant it in shade and see whether it grows okay. If something doesn't grow over winter, well, try it under polythene and fleece and see how it goes. Just try stuff out. It doesn't cost anything. And generally, you've got loads of space available at the beginning and the end of the season to try lots of things out. One of my friends on Instagram was showing their crop of broccoli today. And they'd actually planted their broccoli plants in September, which is way too late. But as a result, they've got a fabulous crop of broccoli, which is just started to come in on stream now. Well, my broccoli, it's all gone to flower, what's left of it now. So I'm completely out of broccoli, but her crop is just starting with a September plant, which is just fantastic because most of my beds are coming free in September. Yeah. So I could plant some in those beds, whereas actually finding space on the allotment in May is really difficult. I've got no beds free for planting broccoli in May, but I've got loads of beds in September. So that's a great opportunity to try. One of the guys on the allotments, he tried planting sprouts in September. Well, that didn't work, but it almost worked. If he'd have planted them in August, he'd have probably still got a late crop. So, all those kind of experiments are just, it's such fun. You can't go wrong, really, because it doesn't cost anything. And always have something growing in the soil, I think. I'm a big believer in that. He says, having only grown for a full season. But a lot of people seem to just, cover the soil over with black plastic. Or just put compost on it, or some people, and there's probably a good case for this as well, is grow green manure. But I prefer to grow stuff I can eat. There's always something, and even if it's just corn salad, for example, you can grow corn, you can plant corn salad in September, and it'll go all the way through the winter. And it'll be a fantastic crop in February and March. So, I just always try and find something to grow in every patch of earth that I've got all the way through the year.
Yeah, sure. I have to admit, the green manure, I'm not a big fan of at all. It does the soil a lot of good. When I've used it before, I just found it left a lot of weeds afterwards.
Yeah, which, and of course you have to turn it into the soil.
Yeah.
And so yeah. if you're doing no dig, then it doesn't work. So, no. You know.
It has its benefits, of course, but it's not how I do it anymore. Mm-hmm. Green manure. I've tried it. Yeah. I didn't like it.
Well, it just seems, as I say, to me, I'd rather grow stuff that I can eat. And so that's what it comes down to for me. Now, all that said, of course, I have the benefit of being retired. And so I can pop down to the plot and look after it every other day for an hour or so. So my style of gardening, salads, a lot of stuff under cover, year round and all of that, that only really works effectively if you can get down to the plot, every other day. If you can't do that, then it's much more difficult to do my style of gardening. But in a way, I chose this style of gardening because I was retired and I wanted something that did give me something to do, every day in summer and every other day outside. And now I'm at the point, which I really like, where I can pop down really early in the morning, go for a hike during the day, come back, pick my crop in the evening, and then repeat endlessly. So it works really well. Last year, the workload was a bit higher, and I was, I was spending 3 or 4 hours a day down there getting everything sorted. But now things are pretty much sorted and stable, so I've got a lot more time to sort of live a bit more balanced life, so it's not totally dominated by allotmenting like the first few months of last year were.
yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah.
Okay, so have you got anything else you would like to add today?
Nothing springs to mind immediately, I don't think.
No, a bit on the spot. We're up to 41 minutes, so it's going to be quite a long podcast today. So how can all the listeners out there keep on track of what you're doing? Obviously, there's a YouTube channel.
So my YouTube channel is Seaside Allotment.
Yeah.
I think if you just search Seaside Allotment on YouTube, I think you'd find me. And then I've got a blog at seasidelife.com. And, from those two places, you should be able to track down my Instagram and things like that. So.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll add all the links into the show notes for today.
Okay.
For this podcast. So they'll be on there if you anybody wants to have a look at these links there. Go ahead.
All right, okay,
so, great stuff. Great to hear from you.
And Jean, thanks for the inspiration. I mentioned in one of the comments, I think you mentioned in one of your podcasts, that pretty much the first thing I did when I retired was I got out my podcast app and searched for vegetable gardening or something like that, and I found your podcast. And so that was the first thing I was listening to for the first few months of my retirement. And then I just thought, I have to get an allotment. I'd not really considered it. Didn't even know whether there were any around me. I was planning to start gardening just in the back garden. And then, inspired by your allotment tales, I tracked down some allotments and put my name down. And 6 months later, I got the allotment. And it's been such a benefit because not only, of course, has it, provided all this joy and fantastic food and community, but it means that I've actually been able to sort my back garden out, which was full of frames and raised beds and all that sort of thing, and looked really ugly, and sort of make the back garden more of an ornamental kitchen garden and fruit garden, and put all the big production onto the allotment where it didn't matter what it looks like because it's all about producing. So you saved my back garden as well, inspiring me to get an allotment.
Well, I mean, when you said that on the channels, I was absolutely blown away with that. It's, I think I said on the podcast as well, it's absolutely brilliant to hear that sort of thing, that the podcasts are inspiring people to take it up.
It's a lovely thing about YouTube, actually, isn't it? I mean, because you know, I've just started, just like I started doing an allotment, I've only started doing YouTube a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, already the sense of community and all the lovely comments and things like that that you get, it's fantastic. And I've had way more comments on YouTube than I ever had on the blog. And it's just a much nicer, you know, a really friendly and engaged community. So I think that, YouTube's just, it's just like an extension of the gardening and allotment and community. It's just really friendly. Yeah. I know a lot of people, of course, say that YouTube can be really horrible and, you know, all these horrible comments people have on YouTube videos, but that definitely doesn't seem to be the case within the allotment community on YouTube. So.
No,
that's been really nice.
Ever had a nasty comment, to my knowledge, but of course that's what a block button's for.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing, you can't deal with these people, block them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I completely agree. YouTube has been it's so many channels on there and so much good information coming out of the people on there that it's probably my top resource, really, because if you want to find something, how to do something, how something does what, it's on there. Just tap it in and it'll come up, mm-hmm. No matter what it is. Oops, sorry, you there?
Yeah, I just promised myself that I would never video myself planting seeds. But I think that there's lots of people, you know, fantastic YouTubers that provide a lot of basic gardening advice on, you know, how to plant seeds and prick on and things like that. I've seen all those on yours as well. So I'm always trying to think of something, you know, what can I show on my YouTube channel that's, you know, not well served by everybody else. So I'm trying to, you can let me know in comments and whatever if I succeed, but I'm trying to find something, you know, slightly fresh and novel for my channel. And so it'd be a lot more about experiments that go right or wrong.
I mean, I generally find, I mean, like with YouTube, I like to just do what I'm doing, a bit like I do with the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's what I do at that particular week. But keeping it fresh, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. You would have thought it is, but it's not. And when someone like your videos come along and it completely ups the game, you know, you're the first one you ever done, and I saw this fantastic looking plot achieved within 3 weeks and producing so much food that you're almost self-sufficient within a year, it ups the game. It makes people think, well, if he can do it, so can I.
Yeah, and, you know, the techniques that I've used are very accessible, really. So, you know, it's relatively simple. But anyway, so I think that it's, you know, but there's a big appetite for the traditional allotment diary. There's a lot of YouTube videos which are just as, like yours. You know, this is what I'm doing this week. Mm. And they're wonderful, and I watch quite a lot of those as well. But, you know, my observation is just that there's a lot of them already.
Absolutely.
You know, and so, you know, what value is there really in doing another one? So my challenge anyway that I've laid down for myself is to keep my allotment life fresh by constantly kind of trying to seek out new things, and that, you know, having to make the occasional new YouTube video showing something, you know, slightly unusual as a result of experimenting on things is kind of my objective. So we'll see how it goes.
No, it's a fantastic idea, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them, I have to say. Yeah,
you'll be seeing my wife's allotment soon as well. So,
oh, brilliant!
So, so this is, I unfortunately, I the beginning of the year, actually pretty much New Year's Day, it may have been the day before New Year's Day, I tore a stomach muscle. And I couldn't bend down, I couldn't kneel down, I couldn't lift, I couldn't do anything, basically. I was completely, I could walk like probably half a mile or something like that. And I've gradually walked up, built up now, so I can do, you know, I can squat down and bend down and stretch to pick stuff on the allotment and things like that, and I can walk. I can't ride a bike, I can't climb a ladder, I can't lift. And so she's had to do this whole allotment makeover of hers. Is that half the size of mine, all on her own. I feel really guilty about it. But as a result of that, she's got such a sense of ownership of it now. You know, it's not sort of me doing it for her or me helping her. It's her allotment. She's done it all. She's designed it all. She's done all the work herself. And she's really well on with it now. So I'm massively proud of her. And whether she'll get to make YouTube videos or not, I don't know. But I shall put in some YouTube videos to show what she's achieved. Yeah. It's really great.
Well, in small steps, one step at a time, and then mm-hmm. she'll get there. Soon she'll be telling you what to do, though.
Yeah, that's right. She's not afraid of doing that already.
Well, that's what wives do, though, isn't it?
Exactly.
Oh, fantastic stuff, fantastic stuff. Okay, well, I think I'm about there, really. I can't think of anything else to ask now. We've covered everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, feel free to call me any time, and we could do this again in September and see how well things have gone.
Yeah, that would be great, actually. Yeah, I think this podcast is going to be quite popular because it's so informative and inspiring. So it'd be good to see how you get on then. So, yeah, we'll sort something out for that come September.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks a lot, Richard.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Steve. And thank you very much for joining us today.
Okay. My pleasure. Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers, mate. Well, thank you very much, Steve. Really, really enjoyed that interview, and I hope everyone else out there did. Really, really, really inspiring, I thought, in seeing how quick turnaround he got and to grow and how his own food. I think any beginner out there, it's worth getting in touch with him and getting a few tips from him. He strikes me as being very organised and very planned out, which is how he achieved clearing an allotment in 3 weeks. And, you know, after a year, having one of the most fantastic looking allotments that I've seen. So it's amazing it can be done. I'm looking forward to having Steve back on the show as well, as I just found that interview really, really good. Now, don't forget, interviews are available for anyone who wants to take part. I hold them on Skype, so it's easy to do. You don't have to do any real special equipment or anything. And I just want to hear from any other gardeners that would be interested in this sort of interview and sharing their experience on growing their own food. And it may get inspiring others to take it up and things like that, like we've had with Steve. So, yeah, if that's interesting of you, get in touch. You can either go through my website, theveggrowerpodcast.co.uk, or you can email me at richard@theveggrowerpodcast.co.uk. So I'm going to wrap up now. It's been quite a long show this week with the interview, but it was worth it. So thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you again next time.